Good morning, everybody. We are in Revelation this morning, and we are actually going to be starting with chapter 8. But chapter 8, we want to set the stage. Remember, we got into chapter 6, and we had the opening of the sixth seal, which brought us to the day of judgment. And there was a question asked, who's able to stand? Because everybody who was terrified and wanted the mountains to fall on them. They were hiding in caves and clefts of rock and all of that. Chapter 7 answers the question, who is able to stand? And it tells us it's the 144,000 from the 12 tribes and the great multitude. And then we get into chapter 8. Chapter 8 starts with the opening of the seventh seal. And then it will go into the trumpets. And so we've got to keep some things in mind. One of the things we've got to keep in mind is that the chapter divisions were added much, much, much later. One of the things that we've seen in our restoration history series on Sunday nights has been some information about the English Bible and its availability to people. And one of the first ways of marking the Bible with chapters and such was done because the Bibles were so scarce that they were actually renting them out for people to read, and they needed to have a mechanism by which they could find their place when they returned to read again. And that was one of the first times that they began marking the Bible up in terms of chapters and divisions. But our chapters and our divisions mislead us very much, because what they do is we're used to things like textbooks and novels and newspapers and magazines. And when you have a table of contents and it says, you know, such and such is on page whatever, you assume that when you go from one chapter to another chapter, you assume that the topic has somehow changed significantly. Either it's a change of viewpoint or a change of action or something. If it's in a textbook, it's a change of topic. Maybe they're adding to something that's there. Maybe chapter one was a history book and it was talking about Christopher Columbus. Chapter two would talk about a different person or something like that. And so when we read the New Testament or any of the Bible and we have these chapter divisions and these verse markings, we tend to put that into the Bible. We tend to bring that into it, and we think that there is a major change when we come to a chapter division. The only thing is, it's not. There, many of them aren't natural at all. They don't even follow rules of grammar lots of times. In the original documents, the only chapter divisions that ever occurred were in the book of Psalms. And in the book of Psalms, when you go from one psalm to another psalm, you are changing. Changing from one, maybe from one author to another author, or from one topic to another topic, you are making changes. And that's the only book in all of the Bible that has divisions in it that were placed there by God. All the others were placed there by man. There's an old joke, an old story, which subsequently really has no basis, but the old story used to go around that one of the first people to really mark up the Bible in verses and things like that was a traveling preacher, and he was working on his manuscript that would be turned into the printer as he was traveling from one place to another, and he was doing it while he was writing, because the horse knew the way, and occasionally some of the markings were because the horse stumbled at that point. You know, that's the old story. There's nothing to it, but it's almost that ridiculous at times. And certainly when we get into chapter 8, we're going to see that there is, we miss it a lot. We miss it a lot. Chapter 8 starts. Let's take a look at the text. It says, when he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Now, so chapter 8 starts with the opening of the seventh seal. Which means if you're going to keep things together, this should have gone with what? With what went before, right? It should have gone with chapter 6, which should have gone with chapter 5. All of that section with the seals should have gone together if they were going to keep it in the marginally, you know, the rules of breaking things apart. But they didn't. So we've got to think about, well, where does the natural division really come? We're going to talk about that in a minute. Let's go on and read the text. When he opened the seventh seal, because we also know another thing, these chapters become pretty short, and they didn't take very long to get through. When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it to the earth, and there were noises, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth. And a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea. And a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood, and a third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blast of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound." All right. So, let's stop right there. You'll note that that's how chapter 8 ends, and of course the fifth trumpet is in chapter 9, and it will go all on up into chapter... we won't get the seventh trumpet until chapter 10. Now, as we begin looking at this, there's a couple things I want you to note. One, as we look at this, one of the popular ways of interpreting this book is to take it as if it's a linear line like this. Okay? See how we move from one thing to another, to another, to another? And that's the way that a great many people have chosen to interpret Revelation. They say that the seven seals, the typical interpretation is by the end of the seventh seal, the church is raptured away, and the seven trumpets and seven bowls and all of that happen after the church is gone, and then you have the thousand-year millennium that comes into existence here on the earth. Well, in order to really correctly interpret this book, we've got to have a clear understanding of the similarities which exist among the visions or the scenarios of the seven seals, seven trumpets, and seven bowls. Once we understand that they're arranged in an almost identical fashion, it then becomes possible to use one to help interpret another. These three visions have seven components. Three aspects. It's actually one vision, remember? It's one vision. This whole thing is just one vision. These three sections have seven components. Three is the number for the divine. Seven is the number for perfection. And so what we're doing is we're seeing that rather than being linear like this, it's more like this. You have the seven seals telling us one aspect, and then it comes back at the end of the seven seals and goes to the seven trumpets, and now you'll have another playing out of the same same things that were in the first section. And you'll do the same thing with the bowls of wrath. They just have different purposes for what's looking at them. In fact, in each of the series, we find that the first six components deal with events which take place on the earth. The sixth one takes us to the end of time. The seventh one describes the time of judgment and eternity. All right? Let's take a look.
Let's do some comparing, okay? Brian, can I get you to look up Revelation chapter 16, verses 17 through 21? And Philip, can you look up Revelation 11, 15 through 19? And Luke, would you mind doing Revelation 8, 1 through 5? What we've got here, Revelation 8, 1 through 5 is the opening of the seventh seal. Revelation 11, 15 through 19 is the blowing of the seventh trumpet. And Revelation 16, 17 through 21 is the seventh bowl of wrath. Okay? And I want you to listen for similarities. I want you guys to read them one right after the other. Luke first, Philip, and then Brian. Okay?
When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about a half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Yet another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense, that he should offer it with prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And he spoke of his senses. But the prayer of the saints ascending before God from the angels at hand. Then the angels took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it to the earth. And there were noise, thunder, lightning, and earthquake.
Okay. Chapter 11.
Seven angels sound. There were great voices at the same kingdoms. Of this those who were to come, the kingdoms of our Lord, of this Christ, he shall reign forever and ever. 4 and 20 elders sat upon God, sat before God on their seats, both on their faces and worshiped him, saying, "Give thee thanks, O Lord God Almighty, which art and was and art to come, because thou hast taken to thee a great power and strength. Nations were angry, thy wrath has come, and the time of the dead, they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward to thy servants and prophets and to the saints, and to them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth. The temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his testimony, and there were lightnings, and voices, and thunderings, and earthquakes, and great hail."
Okay, chapter 16.
Then the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple of heaven, or from the throne, saying, "It is done." And there was there were noises and thunderings and lightning, and there was a great earthquake, such a mighty and great earthquake as had not occurred since men were on the earth. Now the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Then every island fled away from the mountain where not found. The great hail from heaven fell upon man, each hailstone about the weight of a talon. Men blaspheme God because of the plague of the hail, since that plague was
exceedingly
great.
All right, thanks. Now, each of them has some different things, but there is something that is very obvious about each one of these. Each one of these brings you into the presence of God. Each one of them has within it a similar phrase talking about voices, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. All right, all of them are finishing up something. And this is something that's important to see, that they all match up, all right? So when we go to Revelation chapter 8, verse 1, and we read about him opening the seventh seal, and there's silence in heaven for about half an hour, we're taken to the end of time and the beginning of eternity. That's where we're taken. That's what's going on. Remember, the scroll is now completely unsealed. The scroll was sealed with seven seals, like the ancient scrolls of property. As we've been interpreting it, the scroll being opened is the bill of sale, if you will, that allows man to enter into heaven if they follow the conditions of the contract, okay, with God. And so this is what this whole thing has been about. So when the seventh seal is opened, it brings us to eternity. Now, why is there silence when the seventh seal is opened? Well, there's three possibilities. First possibility is that the things which await us in heaven are not completely revealed to us, and that's true. John says in 1 John chapter 3, verse 2, we don't yet know what we will be like, but when we will be like Jesus, we don't exactly understand it. There's another reason. Silence describes this peaceful state which will exist in heaven, because we're also told, you know, that at the last part of chapter 7, those who are sealed, God's going to welcome them and he's going to wipe away all their tears. There's not going to be any crying. There's no more pain. There's no more sorrow. All of that is pictured there. And silence is a picture of the peacefulness. So that's part of it. And it might also demonstrate, as it does in Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 20, that we are in the very presence of God, because not only there, but in several places, it talks about how let all the earth be silent before him. And the idea is that we are in the very presence of God, finally, with awe and majesty, and we are now silent. Now, verse 2 is interesting because it seems to take us ahead. I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. And the angels with the seven trumpets seem to be introduced here almost as if we're meant to understand that there's more of the vision coming. There's more going on. There's a foreshadowing in the second series that we're about to see. But in part, the placement of this introduction emphasizes the warning that will be sounded by the trumpets, letting us know that while we are we have reached, by virtue of opening the seventh seal, eternity, we're going to be going back and looking at it all again, but this time looking at it from the point of view of warnings. And so, when you go back to verse 3, we're back to dealing with what happens when that seventh seal opens. Now remember, one of the things that happened earlier was that when the sixth seal, the fifth seal. When the fifth seal was open, you had the cry of the martyrs, remember? Those souls under the altar, and they cried out for what? Vengeance. And God said, vengeance is going to basically be whose? Yeah, it's going to be his. God is going to give... take a look at chapter 6, verse 10. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were was completed. Now, that statement there tells us God's going to wait until when to deliver his vengeance. He's going to wait till eternity, judgment day, right? So we are at the judgment day now. We are at eternity, the beginning of eternity. So what makes sense is that we suddenly go back to the altar that's in chapter 6 with the opening of the fifth seal. And what is God doing? God is going to what? He's going to give his vengeance that he promised them when the fifth seal was opened. So, As the vision of the seventh seal continues, we need to determine some things. We need, what's the symbolic meaning of the altar? What is the symbolic meaning of the incense? The altar has always been the place where God meets man, right? We read in the Old Testament that we meet God at the altar. The altar of incense was always symbolic of what? No, the prayers of man. Remember? Fact is, when did they put incense on that altar? They did it at the hour of our prayer. Okay? The altar represents our ability to commune directly with God. And in the New Testament, we all are supposed to draw close to the throne of grace, but the throne of grace is also another way of referring to, perhaps, the altar. Because now we don't have a physical altar to have to do something with. We go through who? Yeah, we go through... Say it again. Yeah, we go through Jesus Christ. He's our mediator. He's the one we go through. And so we can approach boldly His throne of grace. All right? Now, so the incense represents the prayers of God's people. And that's confirmed in verse 4. The smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints. It's a sin before God. The phraseology indicates in the Greek language, one of the translators said that this phrase is almost like you should recognize that there's an equal sign. The smoke of the incense equals the prayers of the saints. I think that's probably a good way of understanding it. It equals it, right? And the angel took the censer. Now, censer is what? Anybody know what a censer is? It's a little burner, right? Yeah, it's on a chain usually. It's a metal basket that has coals that you can place coals in. It's basically a portable incense burner is what it's meant to be, okay? Because the altar of incense is fixed in a permanent place, but a censer is something you can take and move around, all right? So a censer is filled with fire from the altar, and it's thrown to the earth. And there were noises, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. So here's the picture. He has the incense censer is here. It's filled with coals. It is thrown to the earth. That's the picture that we have there. Now, remember, the saints in chapter 6, how long before you judge and avenge us? And now we have the casting of fiery destruction from heaven for all eternity on those who have persecuted Christians. All right? Now, the phrase noises, thunderings, and lightnings helps us understand how Revelation is structured. The elements of this phrase are used in the introduction of the throne of God in chapter 4. Go back to chapter 4, verse 5. Okay? Chapter 4, verse 5. We are brought to the throne of God, and it says, from the throne proceeded lightnings, thunderings, and voices. Okay? Now, lightnings, thunderings, and voices is three things, and it's coming from the throne of God, so it's describing what? It's describing God, right? What's interesting is that it's translated voices here in Revelation 4 and verse 5, but the King James or New King James translates it noises in chapter 8. The same phrase is used to conclude the seventh trumpet in chapter 11 and the seventh plague in chapter 16. Now, there are some additional things added in chapter 8, 11, and 19. In chapter 8, what's added? A what? An earthquake. In chapter 11, what's added? Hail.
Chapter 8, 11 have hail? Wait a minute.
Yes, and great hail. Okay? So you've got, and then in chapter 7 or 16, what's there?
You have earthquake, voices, thunderings, lightnings, earthquake, hail, and what's the next thing? The great city is divided.
And Babylon is made to drink the cup of his wrath. Okay? So you have something added each time, but it all starts with what? The basic description of God. Voices, thunderings, and lightnings. And all of that, you might remember when we were in chapter 4, that came from an event that was significant to the Israelite people. What event was that? Yeah, Mount Sinai. Remember, God descends on the mountain and he starts to speak to the people. He's got great lightning and fire on the mountain, and there's thunderings and lightning there, and then there's these voice, this voice, and nobody can stand it. They beg Moses to do what? Hey, yeah, Moses, you go up and talk to him. Don't let him talk to us. It scares the heebie-jeebies out of us. Well, that's the picture. That's where it's drawn from. All right. So the phrase noises, thunderings, lightnings, or voices, thunderings, lightnings, helps us determine where the vision of the seals ends and the vision of the trumpets begins, or the series of the trumpets begin. So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. So verse 6 is actually where a division should occur. Although in verse 2, you had what? You had a foreshadowing, right? You had a foreshadowing that seven angels were given the seven trumpets. Now, so this is a section that's been interpreted in a great many ways. I want to just kind of mention these to you. Some have taken it as descriptions of specific events which took place during the time of the Roman Empire. Some think that they are descriptions of God's judgments upon wicked people during the seven-year tribulation. That's that one chart that I showed you that had linear. We are going to interpret these trumpets as warnings about events which take place throughout the Christian age. We're going to try to be consistent, just as the seven seals takes us, the opening of them takes us all through the Christian age. The seven trumpets are going to take us all through the Christian age. The seven bowls of wrath are going to take us all through the Christian age. So we're seeing the Christian age from another perspective. All right. In this series, God is warning Christians of trials and persecutions that occur on earth that could cause a person to lose their salvation. Now, I'll explain how I got this conclusion in a moment. But the point of these seven trumpets is that being forewarned, Christians should be able to understand things that are happening to them more clearly and thereby hold fast to their faith during these kinds of trials. That's one of the reasons why I think Revelation is an important book for all of us, because if we understand that there are warnings in there of things that could take place and we're aware of what they are, then we can be ready. But if we never think of Revelation as having anything to do with us today, are we even going to know that there's a warning there? No. And we're going to get taken by surprise. And when we're taken by surprise, what happens when someone is ambushed quite often? And when people are ambushed, they usually get hurt or killed or whatever. They usually lose, don't they? Because an ambush is intended to take and exploit the fact that you don't know something. You are being surprised. And here is a warning from God. Now, important elements in this series, we have the trumpet, and it's a difference of purpose between trumpets and seals, and we need to understand the symbolic meaning of the third part of man. So, the Hebrew word for trumpet is shofar.
And usually so far has looked like this, or like that one that I've got at my house. I meant to bring it today and I forgot. Customary in biblical times to sound the shofar, to warn of danger or to announce great events. But it's a trumpet. In the first century world, it was the Jews would still use this, but Romans would use a metal trumpet. Okay, usually on a very long trumpet. Okay, we see the use of this in places like Ezekiel, where he talks about the warning that the watchman on the wall, if he sees the sword coming upon the land and blows the trumpet and warns the people, you know, then he's not responsible for someone who doesn't listen to the warning. But if he doesn't, because had he taken warning, he would have delivered his life. 1 Thessalonians says that the last trumpet will sound when Jesus comes on the day of judgment. So it's warning that there's the day of judgment has arrived. Both of these, announcing great events and the warning of the Christian, are part of what needs to be applied to the seven trumpets. Now, there's a difference between the trumpets and the seals. A seal signifies events which are absolutely certain to take place. First seal was Christians going and striving to evangelize. The second seal had to do with the resistance we have. The third seal has to do with persecutions directed to us. The fourth seal had to do with a famine of God's word in the land. All of those things are things that had to take place and so forth. But a trumpet warns of events which we can prepare ourselves against in order to avoid their consequence. So you're going to see things here in these trumpet soundings that can take place, but not necessarily are guaranteed to take place. I think what we're going to see is that if you look at the overall scheme of history, we will see that at times these things have taken place, and other times in parts of the world they may not be taking place. For instance, in the United States, do we have any much physical persecution? No. But if you're a Christian in, say, Libya or Egypt or Turkey or Iraq or Iran, what happens to you? You can get killed. Even China or Russia. Well, Russia not so much anymore. Fact is, this is interesting. Did you know that after the Soviet Union broke up, that parts of the former Russian Union have now requested people to come and bring Bibles and to teach in their colleges people from the Bible so they get a knowledge about right and wrong? That's in former Soviet Union, but what do we do with the Bible in America right now? Put it on a shelf. You can't come and teach that in college or high school or junior high or grade school. No, can't do that. Yet what was a required textbook at the very beginning of our country, when they made a determination that we want all of our people in the United States to be educated, what was a required textbook? The Bible. Something has changed. All right. Now, third part of man. We've talked about this when we talked about the fourth part in the seals. When we talked about the fourth part of man, what were we talking about? You remember? Yeah, we were talking about the part of man that is flesh. Right. Remember, numbers in Revelation are descriptive. They're not intended to have a specific numerical value. So we have to determine the descriptive meaning of the fraction one-third. All right? Three is the number of deity. Four is the number of the physical world. So the meaning of one-third... What in the world? one-third refers to the third part of a man. One-fourth refers to the fourth part of a man. The number four is a number used as symbolic to refer to physical things, so it's talking about the physical aspect of a man. The number three is a number used to refer to the spiritual. So man has two parts. He has a physical life, he has a spiritual life. The physical part of a man is described when they use the fraction one-fourth. The spiritual part of man is described when they use the fraction one-third. So we're talking about a description of those things which affect what? The spiritual man, right? That's what we're going to be talking about with the trumpets. We're going to see the one-third used again and again and again all through the trumpets. They all affect the spiritual life of man. All right? So the third part is used throughout to warn and prepare man so he will not lose his spiritual part. That would condemn his soul to hell. In other words, they describe events taking place all during the Christian dispensation which affect the spiritual part of man. That's what we're going to see as these trumpets sound. That's the difference between the seals and the trumpets. Okay? So the seven angels prepare themselves to sound. They stand before God. Angels are messengers. These events depicted are messages that come directly from God. All right? So we're seeing something from God's point of view, warnings that are being given to, basically, or primarily given to who? Being given to Christians, right? These are warnings being given to Christians. Now, they apply to all men, but these warnings are being given to Christians because Christians are the only ones equipped to understand the warning. Okay? So in part, what we're going to be seeing is that this is something, if we understand the warning and the rest of the world doesn't, what's part of our job? Huh? To preach? To do what? To spread the warning, right? So we're being called upon to take up, if you will, the trumpet call and warn the rest of the world. All right. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Now, there is a textual variant there, and it says, in some manuscripts, which add, and a third of the earth was burned up. In other words, the last line is, a third of the trees were burned up, a third of the earth was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. I don't know whether, I mean, if it is...
I should have said that error.
Oh, come on. Well, anyway, let me see if I can get the machine back up and running. I'm not sure if this is on. No, it's the automatic fan is on. The projector's not. Come on. Let's see if that works. If it does, it'll come back on in a minute. If it doesn't, it won't. But anyway, so what we have here is we've got a picture of a warning of things that are going to affect the spiritual part of man. Hail. My notes are on the machine. Okay, great. It's all we're going to be Star Warsy now for the rest of the thing. things we need to determine. We need to determine the symbolic meaning of the trees and the green grass. We need to determine the symbolic meaning of the hail and fire mingled with blood. So let's start with the trees and the green grass. The Old Testament uses these images. Remember, all of these symbols, the majority of them come from where? They come from the Old Testament, right? So if we understand how they're used in other places, that helps us understand why they're used here. Okay? For instance, in Judges chapter 9, trees are used to symbolize men who went forth to select a king. In Isaiah 40, grass is used as a symbol for people. Okay? That gives us a biblical basis for interpreting trees and grass as people. Okay? Trees and grass as people. Now, the usage within Revelation. Revelation chapter 9 in verse 4, the locusts out of the pit are commanded not to hurt the grass or trees or any green thing. They're given permission to harm only those who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. Now that's in chapter 9. That's going to be one of the future seals opening. But Revelation consistently uses the same images over and over. So if we have a spot later on which tells us what something means specifically, then we can also know that that's what it's going to mean back behind. So here's the idea. The trees, grass, or any green thing must therefore represent people who have the seal of God on their forehead. So, who is being attacked by, or who is being warned about the first trumpet? It's warning Christians. And a third of the trees are burned up and a green grass is burned up. It's warning us that there will be coming something that can do what to our spiritual life?
Destroy it.
Yeah, it can destroy it. So almost any plant that's alive and growing must be colored green because of the chlorophyll. When this symbolism is applied to people, it represents those who are alive and growing spiritually. The trees, the green grass, any green thing represents those people of this world who have attained spiritual life. They are Christians. Now, is there a difference of degree implied between the symbols used? Maybe. Trees, they're strong, they're deeply rooted. Grass, they're weaker, or maybe newer, they're shallow, more shallowly rooted. When Jesus gave the parable of the soils, what happened? Let's take a look at that. That's in Matthew chapter 10. Take a look there. Matthew chapter 10. I think it's Matthew 10. No, Matthew chapter 13. I'm sorry. Matthew 13. All right? Listen, verses 1 through 9 is the parable, and then Jesus explains it in verses 18 and following. But here's the parable. Behold, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them. Some fell on stony places where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them, but others fell on good ground and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Now here's the parable explained, verse 18. Therefore hear the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, then the wicked one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is he who receives seed by the wayside. But he who received the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. Now let's stop right there. We have shallow ground. The sun comes up and they're scorched. Now go back over to Revelation. Okay? Here you have hail and fire, and you have things being burned up. You think there's kind of a parallel between the images? Yeah. Hail and fire are often used to speak of persecutions and trials. Jesus just talked about persecutions and trials. They are events which come unexpectedly from the outside, just like a forest fire or like hail, right? Mingled with blood may be a reference to the severity of persecutions and trials. They can be very severe at times. But the idea is that this is a warning. And they're followed, you know, there's a warning and then hail and fire followed. In other words, the warning originates with God, but what follows doesn't. The third part of the trees and grass being burned up symbolizes the possibility of Christians losing their spiritual life because of persecutions that arise. Now, in other words, this is a promise that this is something that will be ongoing. We can see it. But we may have periods of time when what happens? When there are no persecutions. There is no hail. There is no fire. But the warning is, you've got to have deep roots. Deep roots. The trees are burned, but what happens to a tree that gets burned often? It comes back. But when something is burned up, now see, the word, there's a little bit of a mix-up here because from what I understand, the original language has the trees were burned, the green grass was burned up. Now, the New King James has burned up, but I think it's supposed to be just burned. But I'll do some more research on that because that's what I read just before I finished putting it all together. But this is a lesson that says we have to keep a constant watch and we have to be aware that persecutions are going to come because of the Word, because of our adherence to God's teaching. And if we aren't aware of that, then we could lose our own spiritual life if we let it burn us up, let it destroy us. And that's one of the things we need to keep in mind. So remember, the repeated mantra of the seven churches is "He who overcomes." And that's one of the things that we'll talk about. All right, we'll stop there and we'll finish. We'll come back to that next week and we'll continue on next week. Thank you very much for a good class. Appreciate it.